Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
For your minimum daily adult requirements of sanity.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, tonight is going to be the big debate. Perhaps the final debate. We'll see how this thing goes as it goes into the home stretch. Apparently yesterday I was making a comment about how there are a few people on the fringe of the Democratic Party and political commentary who are suggesting that Hillary Clinton should pull out, and I was saying that she should actually wait, and you know, until after the voters have spoken. I mean, that's the primary process, and that I think that the primary process, at least as long as it doesn't go all the way to the convention and get brokered, is a healthy thing. And somebody sent me an email saying you called us the lunatic fringe, and if I use the word lunatic, I apologize. I just want to put that out. I think it's the fringe. I don't think it's lunatic fringe, but nonetheless. Mark Morano is with us. Mark is the communications director for the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee on James Inhofe's side, the Republican side. He works for Senator James Inhofe, the Republican senator, and epw.senate.gov is the website. Mark, welcome.
Hey, thank you, Tom. I don't know if I should be honored that you opened by talking about the fringe right before you introduced me, but thank you anyway.
Yeah, well, take it however you like. Anyway, great to have you with us, Mark. You've sent out a news release talking about things like significant growth of Arctic ice. The Greenspan says that the climate bill is going to harm the economy. One of the executives of General Motors has now called global warming a total crock of, excrement.
You should be congratulating him for his courage there.
Hey, you know, he says what he believes. I'm assuming.
And he stood by it, by the way. Unlike most corporate types, it's very impressive.
Well, it is, and I'm sure his paycheck is as well. I mean, you know, if I'm making 5, 10, 15 million bucks a year, it may have some influence on what I say. I don't know. Haven't had that experience, but, and also you're suggesting that too much ice is causing polar bears to starve. I mean, all of this stuff in aggregate just seems pretty startling, but really the bottom line here is this argument or meme or whatever you want to call it that you guys are putting out, that if we try to do something about global warming, that it's going to harm the economy.
Right. I mean, let's step aside the entire scientific argument here, other than to say that we're approaching almost 500 scientists now in our Senate report of the skeptical scientists, dissenting. But
now, of the 400 you had before, we had found 84 of them had been taking significant amount of industry money. Now you're up to 500. How many more are also on the payroll of Exxon?
You know, as we've already pointed out, there's no comparison in the money. Exxon, the most they've given is $19 million over two decades. And the other side, you know, there's been estimates up to $50 billion when you count the UN, foundations, universities, governments, funding, you know, the promoters
billion?
Of climate fear. There's absolutely no comparison in funding.
Okay, so our side is winning. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Well, your side is very well funded, very well organized, and you have the media behind you. So
it could have something to do with our having truth on our side.
Absolutely not. In fact, you know, now we're going on 10 years of the high point in temperatures, 1998. Even Dr. Pachauri, who shares the Nobel Prize with Gore of the UN IPCC, has said we should investigate this apparent plateauing of temperatures. And this year, you know.
Yeah, we should investigate it because it seems to have to do with the ocean absorbing carbon dioxide. And thus, you know, wiping out sea life.
No, actually, you know, there's actually been, in terms of the oceans themselves, several scientists actually in our report debunk the ocean acidification fears, and they debunk, you know, all these things. First of all, CO2, if you look at the geologic record, we're talking science again, but CO2 follows a temperature increase. And this has been, you know, pointed out. If you go to the epw.senate.gov, you can actually read multiple, you know, prominent PhD scientists discussing this. The geologic record is not in dispute on that fact. But also, you're ignoring the fact that CO2 reaches a saturation point. Also in our Senate report of, you know, people pointing out that the more CO2 does not necessarily equal a warmer world, because CO2 ceases to have a warming impact. And many scientists believe we've already seen all the temperature rise we're going to get out of the man-made CO2.
Yeah. I'm not buying it, Mark.
All right, you don't have to buy
it. I'm not buying it. But let's talk about the economic impact.
Sure,
I mean, that's what you wanted to come on and talk about.
We
have ExxonMobil making $40 billion in the last quarter, more than any corporation in the history of the world. Chevron, other oil companies reporting enormous record profits on fossil fuels. And you're concerned about, one study I saw was $150 billion slowdown in the economy. ExxonMobil makes $40 billion. $150 billion is nothing compared to certainly is nothing compared to the revenues of the oil companies.
Well, let's assume that, you know, Al Gore and that, you know, that everyone is correct. Again, let's remove the science. If we were facing a climate crisis, if you accept that premise, all the bills, and let's talk about what's currently available, the Lieberman-Warner cap and trade bill, which will be, you know, they're estimating it'll probably be on the Senate floor potentially by May of this year. This bill, even by Lieberman, the co-author, would be cost the economy hundreds of billions of dollars. Others have estimated it in the trillions.
Well, the BBC's estimate was $150 billion.
On this specific bill, I have not seen that, and that sounds, you know, woefully.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. You're right. My statistic, the BBC is estimating that right now global warming is costing us $150 billion a year. In terms of lost productivity, damage to, you know, things like New Orleans, you know, just a whole variety of things, loss of species.
Came out and said hurricanes have not increased in strength, just in financial damage because of the buildup. And also, if you're going to go by that, the hottest decades in the U.S. were the 1930s, 1934 still being the high point. So, you know, it's just, this is, you know, clearly within cyclical natural climate variation.
But arguably the 1930s was before we put all that particulate matter in the air, which is slowing
also,
down the rate of global warming.
Well, it's also before we put CO2. 80% of CO2 came after 1940 with the advent of World War II and the post.
Right, the CO2 traps the heat, but all that particulate matter, all those jet contrails and all the pollution up there, and all this, particularly now from China and India, all that stuff up there is also reflecting back out into outer space. Heat, and if we start, but now we're back to arguing science again.
Let's
stay with the numbers.
Let's go back to this. But my point, even the co-author admits it would cost hundreds of billions of dollars. And the point on this is, even if we were facing a climate crisis, this bill would not have a detectable impact on the climate. And it's going to, without fail, across the board, raise home energy, heating, air conditioning, and gas, all for pure climate symbolism at a time we're facing a recession, at a time when senators like Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont is worried about low-income people being able to afford their winter heating bills.
So let me see if I get this right. To use a metaphor, you're essentially saying, we can't do away with that buggy whip industry. Come on, we need buggy whips. We got horses out here. The horses are working just fine. Don't tell me about new technology. We don't need no stinking cars. If we start moving away from buggy whips and horses, then you're going to wipe out entire sectors of the economy. And you have no proof whatsoever yet that that there will be any financial benefit to moving to automobiles.
If you care about new technology and moving on to stuff, you want a freer and you want economic growth. Saddling international economies and the U.S. economy, making people poorer, is not the way to get innovation and technology.
Wait a minute. How does building out a whole brand new technology of solar and wind make people poorer?
The federal government spends billions on new technology. Now, you could argue they could spend a lot more.
So do corporations.
Right.
You know, there's a wind farm in I believe it's in Texas now that's generating more power than the largest nuclear power plant we have in the United States.
I don't think we actually disagree that much on this. The point being is there's a lot of reasons to get off carbon-based economies. And one of them, obviously, is reliance on foreign oil, geopolitical, you know, dealing with all the not in my backyard, natural resources, drilling issues. It's obviously new technology would help a lot of things. But before you demonize carbon-based economies too much, it has been one of the greatest liberators of mankind in the history of our planet.
Yeah, those buggy whips were really important things. They were useful.
Carbon-based economies that liberated man, brought infrastructure, running water, electricity.
Yep. Horses got us out, caused us to cease being pedestrians.
You know, anyway, my point being is that carbon-based economies, you can't demonize them too much, but on the other hand,
I think my metaphor works, Mark. I mean, tell me why we shouldn't start going whole hog, full board, full tilt boogie toward new technologies, and instead of giving billions, tens of billions of dollars in subsidies and support to fossil fuel industry, take that same money and put it into new technologies.
Well, you know, and I don't, that's why my point is, I don't think you have there's a big disagreement when it comes to investing in new technology. Senator Inhofe himself supported the Asia-Pacific Partnership, which brings in the developing world that Kyoto didn't in terms of technology sharing and bringing about new technologies. That is where it comes down to, not command and control government. We have a proposal.
So you're all in favor of it unless government gets involved and says, okay, we'll help, and then all of a sudden you're not in favor of it.
Right.
We should just leave it up to Exxon and Chevron.
Yeah. For instance, the Lieberman-Warner bill creates a whole new federal bureaucracy modeled after the Federal Reserve, presidentially appointed board that's going to try to set up.
And you prefer the bureaucracy of a company that's accountable to nobody, Exxon?
I mean, it's not about Exxon. It's not an either-or situation. I mean, the companies are making money because that's the available fuel. It's about bringing about an alternative, and those companies aren't going to make the profits you're talking about.
Okay, well, people can read all about it over at your website, epw.senate.gov. Mark Morano, the communications director, over on James Inhofe's staff. Mark, thanks so much for being with
thanks
us.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Enjoy it.
Always good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
I want to push it to the limit and not heed the warnings. Cause I'll be my old self when I wake in the morning. Oh, but tonight's still young. So
well, the former economist for the World Bank, the former chief economist for the World Bank, Nicholas Stern, he now heads the British government's economic service, which I'm assuming is something like the Treasury Department in the United States, something close to that. It says failure to curb the impact of climate change could damage the global economy on a scale of the Great Depression or the World Wars by spawning environmental devastation that could cost 5 to 20% of the world's annual GDP. This is from a study report released by the British government that he was in charge of. Delaying action, he says, even by a decade or two, will take us into dangerous territory. We must not let this window of opportunity close. So, interesting. There are dueling numbers on all sides. I think what this thing is coming down to, as I said to Mark, and I stand by it, is, you know, are we, is it time to stop manufacturing buggy whips or not? You know, that's the bottom line. It's just so. So, anyway. A lot going on in the world, by the way. The Siegelman thing, this Don Siegelman story, is being picked up. Last night, Dan Abrams did a segment on it on MSNBC, which I thought was great. A tip of the hat to you, Dan. Well done. Keith Olbermann covering it. It is going to be real interesting to see if this thing and how this thing breaks out into the more mainstream media, whether the major news networks start picking it up, because this, I think, could be the tape on the door at the Watergate Hotel, this story. Because as I've said all along, we've been talking about this story for a couple of years now on this program, and finally CBS 60 Minutes did something about it and did a very good job. And this story, it encompasses everything. This Don Siegelman, the former governor of Alabama, vote fraud. First of all, he lost the election in the middle of the night after he had won the election, when a Republican discovered some new votes that they didn't know that they had. Gee, what a discovery! When there were no Democrats and there were no state officials, nobody else around to say or do anything about it. Oh, look at this! So, number one, vote fraud. And then Siegelman trying to expose the vote fraud and running for re-election. And then we have the whole U.S. attorney scandal. And as I've been saying from day one, forget about the attorneys who were fired. I mean, that was those guys, they were fired because they said, no, we won't be your chief political prosecutors. But what about the ones who kept their jobs, like Laura Canary, who prosecuted Don Siegelman, whose husband was in charge of the campaign of Siegelman's political opponent, Bob Riley, the guy who became the governor of Alabama because in the middle of the night they found those votes. I mean, so you've got vote fraud, you've got the politicization of the Justice Department, you've got these U.S. prosecutors being appointed for purely political purposes. You know, I said a couple of days ago that the only telecommunications company that said no to the Bush administration for their illegal wiretaps was Quest, and its CEO is now in prison. Somebody, you know, sent me, a couple of people sent me emails saying, but he's in prison not for saying no. Of course, Don Siegelman's not in prison right now for yelling about voting fraud. Apparently, the guy who is the CEO of Quest did some nasty stuff with regard to securities. I mean, he's there for securities fraud, if my recollection is correct. The question is, was he singled out for prosecution because he's made the decision to say no? And we don't know. I mean, this is how corrupt the system has become, that we're even having to ask these kinds of questions. And what we're seeing here is now Karl Rove, Alberto Gonzalez, George Bush, presumably both of them, frankly, and Dick Cheney and those around them using government agencies, particularly the chief law enforcement agency in this country, the Justice Department, to pursue political agendas. This is not only wrong morally and wrong for our democracy, it's not only destructive of American democracy, it is illegal. And so, it's going to be interesting to see how the Siegelman thing plays out, because this, as I said, I think that this is the tape that they just discovered on the door in the Watergate Hotel. We have just begun to crack this story open, and we need to keep on it. We all of us in talk radio, in the news, right across the board, all the bloggers out there doing excellent work on it, Mark Crispin Miller, Brad Friedman over at bradblog.com, and many, many others doing great work on this, talking about this. The thinkprogress.org had the 60-minute clip on it yesterday. A lot of other blogs do as well. It's out there. Share it with your friends. Get the story out. Get it out there, and get it out there soon, because this is a good one. This is a good one. By the way, over just a few quick in the news sort of things. Over 200 9/11 first responders, family members, and supporters. This from thinkprogress.org will be rallying on Capitol Hill today to draw attention to the health care issues that 9/11 workers are facing. You will recall Christy Todd Whitman, who was the head of the EPA at the time, saying, "Don't worry, everything's fine." Rudy Giuliani, the mayor of New York, saying, "Don't worry, everything's fine." At the same time, immediately after 9/11, at the same time in the background, the actual scientists at EPA, the actual scientists in New York City, and anybody with any common sense was saying, "Hey, wait a minute, the air is full of asbestos. It's full of all kinds of ungodly chemicals. You're going to have people with lung damage and possibly long-term things like cancers and whatnot." Well, now it's happening. And it's been ongoing for a long time. And now people are starting to speak out and say, no, no. And this is not political. This is not about Rudy Giuliani's political future. He's toast, political future-wise. He's a millionaire, and he's going to become a multimillionaire because, you know, he's in with the Republican Party. But politically, he's toast. This is not about that. This is about lies from this administration, lies from the Republican Party. Again, the politicization of an agency, in this case the Environmental Protection Agency, purely for political purposes. The damage being done to this country by Rove and Bush.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Simple-minded and the uninformed can be easily led astray. And those that cannot connect the dots, hey, look the other way. People believe what they want to believe when it makes no sense at all. And I wish you all on sideline and the strength to walk tall. Walk tall.
Buggy whips, I'm telling you. It's buggy whips. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you, and time for a theocracy alert.
What a friend we have in W.
Upright,
strong, and resolute.
And his favorite country.
God wished him to be our leader. The court could not but follow.
His favorite country, Saudi Arabia.
Righteousness has filled our nation.
Well, it's certainly filling Saudi Arabia.
Justice overflowing its rim.
Saudi Arabia began interrogating 57 men Saturday who were arrested for flirting with women in front of a shopping mall in the holy city of Mecca. The police, informally known as the Mutah, a literally enforcer, don't wear uniforms, but are recognizable by their long beards and their robes, shorter than the ones normally worn by Saudi men. They also shun the black cord that sits atop the headdress worn by most Saudi men. So, 57 guys in jail for flirting. And this ain't nothing compared to what they do to the women. But it's Saudi Arabia. And they've only transferred about $1 billion to the Bush family and their economic interests. So, what can you say?
Yes, especially if the weather isn't clement, I'll just stay at home and pray.
Now that's what Republicans should do. Just stay at home and pray. That's 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. We are live today, February 26th. I'll be off tomorrow through Friday, just FYI, going off on the Air America cruise. Laura will be here, Laura Flanders, one of my favorite talk show hosts. She'll be doing a great job for you. And then we'll be back on Monday. And right now, John in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, John, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Well, you know, I heard that story from that gentleman from Imhoff's office.
Yes, sir.
And he was talking about let the market govern. And that's a fallacious argument because the cost of oil doesn't include the cost of our military to protect the oil industry. It doesn't include the medical costs that we all pay for the effects of the pollution. So the costs of the oil that he's talking about in the free market don't include the true cost.
You're right. Those things that you're describing are generally referred to as externalities. And if you consider all the externalities associated with the cost of gasoline, for example, the military to protect it, and in particular the military to protect it and the cost of medical care for people who get everything from emphysema to cancer as a consequence of it, gasoline is actually costing us about $10 a gallon. The problem is, or the reality is, that the $6 a gallon that we don't pay at the pump, we're paying in taxes.
Exactly. And I just get tired of that argument that those guys come up with.
Yeah, well, but they're going to keep on making it, and we need to keep knocking it down. John, I agree with you. Thank you very much. Well said. Do appreciate it. 1-866-303-2270. Matt in Napa, California. You resent something I said?
Oh, I talked to you a couple of weeks ago about the third party stuff, and I just have a little bit more to say about it from some stuff you said yesterday. And
Okay. Basically,
the three things that I thought I heard picked up was that, you know, you referred to third-party people as fringe, which...
No, let me stop you right there, Matt.
Okay.
I said that there is a fringe element within the Democratic Party who is suggesting that Hillary Clinton should pull out now because for some... under their strange logic, her and Barack Obama competing in a primary is not a good thing. I think it's a very good thing. I think it strengthens both candidates. I think there's still a possibility that she'll win this thing. And if she doesn't, that he will. One of them is going to be the nominee. And this is the crucible that is going to, you know, purify them. I mean, this is the heat. You know, you have to use heat to get the gold out of the ore, you know. And so what I said yesterday, and I did apparently at one point say lunatic fringe, and it was a miss, you know, I shouldn't have said that. But there is a small element, I know of at least one reporter, and there's a few people on the radio saying, oh, gee, Hillary should pull out now. And my position is that let's wait and hear what the voters of Ohio and Texas and Rhode Island and Vermont have to say, you know, a week from today. And then, you know, let's talk about this. And then, frankly, I'm sure she'll be talking about it.
Actually, I think maybe you used the term fringe twice yesterday or something.
Oh, I used the term fringe several times, whether I used the word lunatic.
This was in regard to Ralph Nader and third-party voters, and you kind of
referred to
players and not politically savvy or something to that effect, and something like not team players, I guess what I thought I picked up.
Well, I don't remember my exact words, but I'll...
Okay, just if I can make a couple comments.
Go ahead and do your
work,
sure.
I think that when we look at the political spectrum in an overly linear way, it kind of gets us in trouble because, you know, it sets up the whole paradigm that elections are decided at the middle, you know, that moderate voters being swung one way or another is really the key to elections. And that actually, you know, puts people on the so-called fringe out of the loop.
Well, I think it's also demonstrably false.
Forces them into being not team players.
Yeah, and I think it's demonstrably false. I think that when political parties work to their base and are own up to their strengths, that they win elections. And, you know, Harry Truman said it best, but it's been said and done a lot of times over the years. But here's the point, that I think is most important. The one thing, and yesterday my point was that I welcome Ralph Nader in the presidential, and I think I'm a lone voice in saying this. It seems everybody else is like, oh, no. And I welcome him because, A, I don't think that he's going to get enough votes to harm the Democratic nominee, as some argue happened in 2000. I'm not one of those who argues that, but some people argue that. And so, A, I don't think he's going to hurt the Democratic nominee. And, B, I do believe that he will be raising important issues that need to be raised. And so I'm glad, frankly, that he is coming into the race. That was the point that I made yesterday. And with regard to third parties, here's the one problem that I have with what Ralph Nader said when he was on Face the Nation or Meet the Press or whatever it was on Sunday. He said, you know, in I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember which countries he used as examples, but he said something like, you know, in Israel they have five parties or six parties. In France they got a bunch of parties. In Germany they got a bunch of parties. What's wrong with having a bunch of parties here in the United States? And the reality is that all of those countries that he named use proportional representation, and we don't. We have first past the post winner-take-all primaries. We're one of only five democracies in the world that does so. Two of those other democracies have gone to instant runoff voting or variations of that, New Zealand and Australia, and have solved that problem. And Greece, one of the other five, is constantly, you know, rising and collapsing as a consequence of this. James Madison in Federalist Number 10 was freaked out. He didn't know what to do about it, but it wasn't until 1861 when John Stuart Mill first came up with the idea of proportional representation that there was a system of democracy that would accommodate a large number of political parties and still be small-d democratic.
And, right. I agree with what you're saying for the most part, but I think it does kind of conflate two different issues, which are the proportional representation, which I think Nader is saying we should move towards a system that uses that, but it doesn't necessarily outlaw or in any way institutionally prevent a third party candidate from running.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And that's why I said welcome Ralph, because, you know, he'll run, but he won't get the votes, but he will raise the issues. And the problem, the tragedy that we have, and this gets back to the media thing, the tragedy that we have is that Ralph Nader, back when he was the head of Citizen and, you know, Public Citizen and other things like that, he had a platform to speak from and he could call a press conference and people would show up. Now that he's turned the responsibility for all those great organizations that he started over to other people, he's basically just Ralph Nader Citizen. And the only time that, even though he's constantly speaking out on these issues and writing position papers and doing the good work, it's completely ignored by the media unless he runs for president. So he's running for president. Some attention will be paid to him, and frankly will be paid to very important issues. And I think that that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for democracy. I think it's a good thing for America. And frankly, I don't think it's going to be a bad thing for the Democratic Party. The other point that I made in that context yesterday is that the Libertarian Party, particularly given its growth, when Ron Paul finally pulls out of the Republican race, he's so raised the profile of libertarianism. Libertarian Party will probably pull more from the Republicans than Ralph Nader would ever pull from the Democrats. So that was my point. Matt, thank you though for the call and for bringing it up. David in Bainbridge Island, Washington. Hey, David, what's up?
Good morning. I wanted to point out to the Hillary Clinton supporters, why are the Republicans voting for her in the primary? Why did a man like Dick Armey, former Republican House Speaker, praise her? And
The polls I've seen indicate that a lot of Republicans are actually voting for Barack Obama.
Well, my daughter lives in New Hampshire, and she knows a lot of Republican friends, and they said they all were going to vote for Hillary. The reason is because McCain can beat Hillary. That's what the polls all show. In the state of Washington this week, against McCain, Obama was 55%, McCain was 40%. Hillary against McCain was 49%, Hillary 46%.
Yeah.
And national polls,
and there are a number of national polls that echo those similar results. Although, keep in mind, David,
the Republicans want her to be the nominee.
I don't disagree with you, although it may or may not be true, because the fact of the matter is that Hillary Clinton has been on the receiving end of Republican attacks for the better part of 20 years, and Barack Obama has not yet begun to be on the receiving end of Republican attacks. So whether he can beat John McCain or not, or whether Hillary can't, I mean, she hasn't begun to campaign on a national basis against McCain, and Barack Obama hasn't been attacked by McCain. So I look at those numbers and go, yeah, but I wouldn't take them to the bank. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. The true people's radio.
Tom Hartman.
War in Iraq, but no WMDs. $500 trillion down the toilet, please. That's no big deal, but convicting little Scooter ain't fair. You're poking the bear.
Yeah, Russell warned us about that one.
W knows what's just and what's fairest. Put me in jail if you think I'm a terrorist. But nailing a guy for outing a spy curls my hair.
poking the bear.
You don't want to do that.
You're poking the bear.
9.5 minutes before the hour, Greg Pallast is with us, a progressive investigative journalist, author of the New York Times bestseller Armed Madhouse. His website, Greg Pallast, PALAST.com. And Greg, welcome.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
Or welcome back, actually. You're one of my favorite people in general and also on the radio. Exxon Shipping Company versus Baker case. This is dragging on for 20 years. What's the deal here?
What's the deal? It's 19 years in a couple of weeks since the Exxon Valdez hit the rocks, and these guys haven't paid up, Tom. 19 years.
Now, who did pay?
No, just Exxon, who slimed 1,200 miles of Alaska coastline and said, we'll pay every penny of the damage. We'll take care of everyone. They're still holding on to that checkbook in their cold, undying hand.
And, well, they got to make sure that their stockholders are compensated.
Just so you know, and I'm not, you know, an objective journalist on this. I was head of the investigation for the Chugach Alaska natives that own that shoreline that they mm-hmm. slimed, and investigating frauds by Exxon, and they were aplenty. Here's what's going on and why this is important to people now. It's not just, you know, about whether the Indians get paid, you know, the natives of Alaska who got slimed. It's, you know, as you were talking about there, Scooter Libby gets a pardon. Well, so did Exxon. Basically, Exxon waited till their boy, they were the number one contributor after Enron to Bush's campaign, till they had their own boy give them a Supreme Court that would basically take away a jury verdict which said that they had to pay for the damages, including punitive damages, so they wouldn't do it again. That's the important thing. 19 years. Now, what did these guys do? It wasn't, you know, the PR line, Tom, is that a drunken skipper hit the reef. In other words, like it's like some drunk at a wheel and he turned the wheel wrong and he hit
it. Wasn't like Joseph Hazelton or something?
Yeah. Hazelton, Captain Joe. He was asleep below decks. That's not what it's about. If it were just drunken skipper hit reef, it's not a corporate issue. It's a it's you know, some human error, even though the corporation shouldn't have let a drunk at the wheel. But he wasn't the wheel. Here's what happened. He was below decks. They were heading into a reef, and the radar, why didn't the radar pick up the reef? It was the most sophisticated radar on a ship you could have, called the Raycast radar. It shows a big picture of the reef. Even, you know, like my 10-year-old son could have taken the boat through without hitting the reef. It's just, you just have to go between the two bright lines, okay? Mm-hmm. Why didn't that happen? Because the radar was turned off, Tom. The reason the radar was turned off is that it was too expensive to maintain and too expensive for Exxon to train. It was a brand new ship, and rather than spend the money and the time to train their people to use it and spend the
now wait a minute, that makes no sense, because they lost all that oil, they lost the ship, or they damaged the ship. I mean, the cost certainly had to be more than the radar. Somebody at Exxon had to have some sense.
No. Okay, if you say, okay, if we turn off the radar, we're going to hit the reef, yeah. But keep in mind, this is one part of an entire process of lying and chiseling pennies, which added up to billions. They were supposed to, even if the ship, when the ship hit the reef, right there on Bligh Island, right where the ship hit, there was supposed to be all this kind of what's called boom, rubber boom. Basically, it's just a whole bunch of buoys and stuff, which is a big rubber skirt which goes around a ship when it hits a rock, and then you suck out the oil, and that's it. And maybe there'd be a little notice at the back of a paper or something. You wouldn't have even known about this thing. They said that they had the boom there right on that reef, but they didn't, because they figured, who's going to check? The only thing that you got out there is a bunch of natives and icebergs and seal. So who's going to check if we put $1 million worth of rubber boom out there? So they didn't put it out. They were supposed to have, they weren't supposed to run the ship if there was no emergency. They're supposed to keep a one ship that has nothing but emergency equipment on it. So if a ship hits a rock, it runs out and surrounds the ship and sucks out the oil. Again, you shouldn't even know that the ship hit a reef, because it's not a big deal. By itself, it's not a big deal. But this multi-million-dollar containment vessel was, in fact, not in the water. It was up on a dry dock with all its equipment offloaded and underneath ice. Remember, this is Alaska in March, right? It's underneath ice. They weren't supposed to be running a tanker at all that night because the containment ship, in case of an accident, wasn't in the water.
Now, Greg, Exxon says they've paid $3.5 billion and that's enough.
Yeah, I know. That's enough. And let's not forget that when the ship hit the reef, that cut the supply of oil when the pipeline had to shut down. And they actually, the price of oil went up. Yeah. It was a profit. Hitting the reef was a profit center with these guys. So how do you get them so that it costs them money instead of makes them money when they hit a reef? You have punitive damages, and that's what's before the court, the punishment.
The Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court tomorrow. This Supreme Court believes you shouldn't have your day in court. They have come up with this arbitrary idea that punitive damages should never be more than three times actual damages. Now, where that is in the Constitution, I don't know.
It's not.
But they come. But the Bush court came up with that.
So
now,
where does the Supreme Court come up with something that has nothing to do with the Constitution?
Well, wait. But this gets better. You yourself told me that Exxon has said that there was $3.5 billion.
We just have a half a minute here, Greg. Before
right.
we get
$3.5 billion worth of damage. Multiply that by three. That's $10 billion. The Supreme Court has already overturned and says that they don't have to pay $5 billion in punitive damages. So now it's being chiseled down, and they chisel it down and delay. And let me tell you, I'm making this broadcast for one reason. Exxon told me that we're going to wait till every native is dead before we pay, and that's what they've done. Most
Holy
of the steel hunters
cow.
Are gone, and
Holy
that's
cow.
Why I'm here.
And this is what happens when you have a Republican president appointing Supreme Court justices like the corporate lawyer John Roberts.
In Alaska, they can't hear you scream.
Yeah, indeed. Greg Palast, gregpalast.com. Read all about it. Greg and Arm Madhouse's most recent book, Exxon Shipping Company versus Baker. Greg, thanks for being with us.
You got it, Tom. Bye.
57 minutes past.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Where smart people get their news. The Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Where smart people get their news.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. What is the state of feminism in the world and in America? What is the state of women in the world and in America? We've done a kind of joking alert in the last hour about Saudi Arabian men getting arrested for flirting. Women get stoned to death there. And, well, in fact, in the United States, when the Puritans first came over and the Pilgrims, it was not uncommon for them to put women to death for being witches. It was one of the reasons why Ben Franklin left Massachusetts in the late 1600s. He was, as a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, he was over it. He was tired of it. And feminism seems to have gone through several waves, arguably three. The Sojourner Truth's 1851 speech, kicking off arguably the first major wave. Then the second wave of feminism in the 1960s, and the third wave now in the 1990s, which seems to be broadening and dealing with issues of not just gender, but also things like race and whatnot. And in the midst of this, of course, there is a response, as there always is. Mike Adams is on the line with us. He is a criminology professor at the University of North Carolina in Wilmington, one of the nation's leading critics of the, quote, diversity movement, end quote, in academia. Writes a nationally syndicated column for the conservative website townhall.com. His website, dradams, as in dradams.org. And his new book, Mike Adams' new book, Feminists Say the Darndest Things, a politically incorrect professor confronts women on campus. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. Why take, I've spent some time with your book here. Why take a series of, I will grant you, absurd statements by women who claim to be feminists and use those statements or actions in some cases, and some of them actually didn't, many of them didn't even stand, as a way of painting an entire movement when still in the United States today, women are earning earning a fraction of what men are. Women in the United States don't have the full rights and powers that men do. And around the world, the state of women is a tragedy.
Well, let me tell you something. Women do not have the same outcomes as men in America, but there's no guarantee that you get equal outcomes in America. That's Marxism. The question is of equal opportunity.
I don't recall having mentioned outcomes.
Well, no. Hold on just a second. What were you saying? You were talking about women not making as much as men. Okay. Now you are assuming that that is a
that's Marxism to suggest that somebody should be paid the same regardless of their gender is Marxism.
No. You're talking about them not having the same outcome. Okay. If you make the argument that they're guaranteed the same outcome, that is in fact Marxism. They're guaranteed the same opportunity. The reasons why women don't make as much today don't have anything to do with discrimination at all.
And they have to do with?
Well, for example, we're different, biologically speaking. Women in this country choose very often to go and have children. It's a part of their right to choose and to raise a family. As a result of that, that has an impact on the average.
But I'm talking about women in the workplace. Are you suggesting
that
having a penis should qualify somebody to make 20% more than somebody who doesn't?
No. You obviously have not studied the research, okay? The fact of the matter is, if you take the time to raise a kid, if you make that choice, and then you enter the workplace after that, well, what does that mean? At your age, you're going to be behind, okay? That's a function of biological differences. That's not discrimination. It's not the same thing.
The real numbers after are that right now, full-time female employees, we're not comparing apples to apples, full-time female employees in the United States earn 77% of men's median wages. White women earn 73%, black women 63%, Hispanic women 52%.
Right.
On a year-to-year basis without children.
Longer than women.
No, we're not talking about lifetime income. We're talking about annual income.
Yes, that's right. And the people that you're comparing a group of men on average with more years of work experience than women. You're not factoring that in, okay? I'm sorry, but that variable has not been taken into account in your analysis.
All right. So,
and no, actually, it's not all right, because the fact of the matter is...
Well, no, I'm not accepting your logic, but I say, and where do we go from there? You know, let's move on to another topic.
You have to move on, because you haven't taken into account the full spectrum of variables.
So you're saying that there is no discrimination against women in the workplace in the United States?
Systematic discrimination? Absolutely not, according to Pay. No, women are catching up. There are outcome differences because of past discrimination. Equal opportunity is there, and that is why the gap is closing rapidly.
Oh, well, I acknowledge that it's gotten a whole lot better. And it's gotten a whole lot better. I mean, you know, women couldn't even vote 100 years ago in the United States.
Right.
It's gotten a whole lot better because of the feminist movement. Why are you ridiculing this?
Oh, because the feminist movement has changed since then, okay? On college campuses today, women are doing a lot of things. Now, my question is, have you read the book?
I have read much of the book, yes.
Okay, there you go. And what you see is that women are beginning to do things on college campuses in the feminist movement. And what they are starting to do is things that are reversing the equality. See, what you have to understand is that you and I are on absolutely the same side if we both believe that women are equal and if they deserve to be treated the same. And that's why that whole exchange we just had is irrelevant, because today on the campus feminist movement, in the campus feminist movement, they are pushing things like speech codes on college campuses that are, in fact, reinforcing a false idea that women are emotionally inferior. You're opposed to that notion, aren't you?
Actually, Mike, I would be the first to acknowledge that there are differences between men and women.
Okay, no.
There very much are differences. And I think, you know, it's coming into high relief right now, for example. You know, Barack Obama yesterday, there was this picture of him, you know, dressed in Somali garb with a turban on, and everybody got all upset about it. And yet when pictures of Hillary Clinton come out that show her being... with a face that looks a little angry or something like that, or when she is forceful, you know, if Barack Obama were forceful, they'd say, hey, he's really getting his mojo, or if John McCain were out there saying, I'm not going to take this anymore, they'd say, John McCain, he's really, but Hillary Clinton, she's getting shrill and angry. I mean, we treat women and men differently in the United States, and I think it's entirely appropriate that somebody stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, maybe this isn't going to go away, but at least let's become aware of it and try to compensate for it.
Well, I'm terribly sorry that you treat women differently than men. I don't, and I'm terribly sorry that you're doing that. You've got to change yourself.
What?
Because I don't.
So you date men and women both, huh?
What is that?
You date men and women both?
D- date men and women both?
Yeah, I mean, come on. Are you trying to tell me that they're...
Okay, explain that remark to me.
What you're doing,
no,
Mike,
explain that remark to
by
me.
Suggesting that women
well,
and...
Hold on a second. I date women and men both?
Yes.
Why are you asking me that?
Because you said, hey, they're identical.
No, I said I treat them the same. Now, why do you
right.
ask me if
so,
I date
so
men
you would
and
ask...
women?
It was a throwaway line. It was a joke. You know, the obvious extension was, if you treat them identical, if you would ask a woman out for a date, would you ask a man out for a date? But it's really not
yeah,
the
you
point.
Didn't,
you know,
didn't
let's get back to the serious stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a poor attempt at humor.
It was poor, right?
As I would suggest, you know, your book is a poor attempt at humor because you keep taking these admittedly absurd. I mean,
They're funny.
Many of them actually are. They absolutely are. But there are real issues, both in the United States and around the world. Female genital mutilation is a serious problem. The in my opinion, obviously
oh,
not
God.
Yours,
you
the underpay of women in this country.
You didn't finish the book. Did you read the last chapter about me adopting the girl from Southeast Asia?
No, I did not.
Oh, so you missed it. Okay, the whole point was that women are being abused in Southeast Asia. They're being abused under radical Islam. And instead of all this self-absorbed vagina monologues, what we need to do is to help women who are suffering from severe inequality.
Mike, the vagina monologues are principally about violence against women in the United States. Are you denying that that's happening? Are you suggesting that there is as much violence against men in the United States as there is violence against women?
Do you know where my book advance went? 100% of it to apply to adopt a little girl from Southeast Asia, okay? Now, if you're implying, oh, gosh, how dare you ridicule feminism because there's all this inequality, the question is, what are you doing about it? Yesterday, I pledged away both of my book sales bonuses, 100%.
How much was that, Mike?
An orphanage in Africa.
And how much was that, Mike?
What?
How many dollars was that?
$10,000 each.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's marvelous. You know, $10,000. I salute you for that. And
$10,000.
And
the first thing, $10,000. That's a cumulative $30,000. What are you doing?
Well, good luck and God bless. People
doing?
Can read the book. We've got to go to a break. I thought our call screener had told you that we take a break at 16 after. We're wrapping it up. Mike Adams is the author. The book is Feminists Say the Darndest Things, A Politically Incorrect Professor Confronts Women on Campus. Check it out. His website, Mike Adams, dradams.org, dradams.org.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's me and the Carlisle Group. Here we go. Get real close. Strangers in the night. Exchanging gunfire, liberals so uptight, call me a liar, challenging my war, before my term is through.
Yeah, poor George.
Something in their eyes is getting scary, keeping to my plan is getting hairy. Every day it's hard to do the things I do.
Okay, enough, George. Thank you very much. Nine minutes before, 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, my, oh, my. By the way, our program brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers of SEIU 1199. Fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans, because health care in the United States should be a right, not a privilege. 1-866-303-2270, TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our blog or participate in our message boards. Jeff in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I just really wanted to call in and apologize to women on behalf of all men. that guy just scared the heck out of me. I can't believe he's teaching our children.
Well,
I just wanted to redeem the male species, the male gender here by saying that guy does not represent us in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, he doesn't represent me. I'm not going to trash him. He's not here to defend himself. But
of course.
I am a little concerned with the logic that says that you can trash somebody and then make a donation to them, and that makes it all well.
Let me point up what you probably were about to, which is that his last point really pointed out the difference between you know, your hardcore conservative and your average liberal American, which is, you know, one guy is going to spend a little money to help one woman or a few women overseas, but all of the women of America need a little bit of a boost, you know, through affirmative action or some other programs to help them with education and pregnancy and you name it. And that's just the liberal way that we do things here in America.
Amen. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Good to hear from you. Pam in Kenwood, California. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Tom. The previous caller, the gentleman who just called, he said a lot of the things that I wanted to say. There's also one little thing I thought about, and that is Joan Crawford adopted children.
Right.
Because he's going out and doing these $10,000 gifts to various things, I just find him a little, like the previous caller said, scary that he's teaching our children.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah,
Tom.
I guess, yes. Thank you, Pam. I'd like to stay with the issues here, though. Larry in Tacoma, Washington, I think it is, but listening on K-Talk?
Yes.
Hey, Larry.
Yeah, I was just wanted to mention that Mike, he was saying that women stayed home and had children were behind, and so that's why their salaries behind. I wonder then if he would be insinuating that if Hillary became the president, since she stayed home and had Chelsea, then would she get less than George because she's behind?
Oh, excellent logic. Excellent logic.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Larry. Patty in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Patty.
Hi there. I was just listening to the last caller, too, and I think he has a good heart, obviously. But I was going to guess he was born in the 50s or something and still has residual chauvinism. Anyway, my hope and effort for him being similar in age and having come up with the lib and then watching these young girls on campus now getting to play rugby, females on football teams, going into the fire department, the police department, if maybe he would spend some time on these campuses, actually in these classes, and see how the teaching is different.
Well, he teaches in college. He's a college professor.
I know. I don't think he teaches women's studies, though.
Yeah.
Of where they've been and where they're going. And I think a little re-education program for him maybe would put his heart back on the right track.
Maybe we can raise some money for it. Patty,
there you
thank
go.
You very much. I appreciate it. Amy in Rockville, Maryland. Hey, Amy.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I want to say I think women will not really be equal until the work that they most often do in the home, raising children, is actually considered to be work. I think it's sad that your guest said, well, they do all this thing, which is really the most important thing that we do, raise children, so they're behind.
Yeah, in other countries, actually, you get paid for, you know, home. I mean, in Denmark and Sweden and Finland, you get your full pay while you're raising your kids or while you're home, at least for a year or 2 years some cases 3 years. And we should have something like that here. Amy, thank you very much. John in Phoenix, just a little bit here, a half a minute before the break. John, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom, I just had two things to say. One, I think he got a little bit too defensive when you asked him whether he would date a guy. And also, the way that
when I asked him if he'd date a woman. I don't know.
Well, also, I think that the way that he was saying, well, look, I do all this stuff to help women and da-da-da-da-da, yet he's giving off these other mixed signals. I'm not sure if he isn't pulling a Mark Foley here. And, you know, he's trying to do this to not to divert away from the fact that maybe he really doesn't feel that way.
Interesting. Yeah, a Mark Foley. It's been a while since I've heard that name. John, thank you very much. Not a long while, but, boy, he sure dropped off the radar screen quickly, didn't he? That's interesting. So, anyway, the state of feminism in the United States today, and frankly, what fascinates me is how this influences this current race. As I said, the pictures of Hillary and pictures of Barack. People are outraged about negative pictures of Barack. Why not the outrage about negative pictures of Hillary?
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Night after night, I try to make it up together. Night after night, I see you as someone I remember. You took me by surprise, opened up my eyes. Now we gotta talk this over.
34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Interesting story here. Stephen Johnson, the EPA administrator last month, denied a California, this is from thinkprogress.org, denied a California waiver that would have allowed 16 states to implement landmark automobile greenhouse gas emission reductions against the advice of EPA staffers. This is getting very complex, but the bottom line is the Bush's war on science is ongoing, and there are now calls for this guy to step down from the Environmental Protection Agency for doing this tragic type of behavior that is frankly destroying America. 866-303-2270, our number. Bill in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Bill.
Hey there, Tom. I really love your show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. What's up?
Well, just in regards to Hillary Clinton, you know, my sister was in town this last weekend, and we were talking. We're both Barack Obama fans, but we can't believe the misogynist stuff that keeps coming up on Clinton. It's ridiculous how if that's allowed in the mainstream media or accepted. Just describing her as shrill or talking about how she should relate to her husband differently, it's just not acceptable.
I agree. It's been absolutely bizarre. And
you know, Michelle Obama's got to get ready for it because they've already started with her, and it's a damn shame. But hopefully, you know, I don't know. But I like Michelle Obama, and they're going to do the same thing to her.
Republicans always go after the women. Look at, you know, Joe Wilson came out and spoke truth about the Bush administration. Who'd they go after? His wife. I mean, that's right. It's the Republican way. Thanks a lot, Bill, for the call. Mark in Oakland, California. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Tom. How are you this morning?
Fine.
Always a pleasure to speak with you. I wanted to, you're a man of science, and I believe that most of your audience are peoples of science. Yep. One thing you may not be aware of, physiologically, women, like all human species, have two spheres in their brain, the left side and the right side. What differentiates men and women is the connecting tissue between these two hemispheres. It's called the corpus callosum. The analogy would be your internet computers. The fatter the pipeline, the more information you can process at any given time. Women have a significantly larger corpus callosum, which allows them to multitask and to balance the needs of their lives far more adequately than do men.
Well, if that's the case, it would allow a more appropriate balance between the emotional side and the intellectual side, the abstract side.
That is absolutely true. That is absolutely
true. And women live longer than men, too, and in many regards have more endurance than men. I don't know very many men who could do childbirth. I mean, I watched it three times. I used to say I delivered two of our three children, and until Louise started correcting me, saying, no, I delivered them. You caught them. And she's absolutely right. You know? So, anyway, Mark, thanks a lot for the call.
You're very welcome, Tom, and thank you very much.
Okay, yeah, and keep up the, you know, keep passing the word along. Joe in Chino, California, you want to get back to Mark Morano's debate this morning?
Yes.
Okay, what's up?
It's about the limits, or rather the suggestion from Inhofe's guy that there's a saturation effect on CO2 in the atmosphere.
Right.
He's technically correct, but we would have to have a situation like the planet Venus, which has a 96% carbon dioxide and a surface temperature of 900 Fahrenheit. I don't think we want to go there.
No. In fact, we have less than 1% carbon dioxide. We're talking parts per 400 parts per million, more or less, right now, carbon dioxide.
Actually, 0.03%.
Thank you very much. Yeah, because most of our atmosphere is nitrogen, and you know, and then there's a good chunk of oxygen in there. It's, what, in the neighborhood of 18 or 20%, something like that?
Oxygen would be around 20%. My degree's in geology,
okay,
and I've taught high school physics and chemistry for over 20 years.
Yeah.
So I do have some.
Yeah, so we could theoretically saturate the atmosphere with carbon dioxide, but there's not enough free carbon around, at least that we know of on this planet, to cause that to happen, and it ain't going to happen anytime soon.
Well, we have
We did actually about 4 billion years ago, didn't we have an atmosphere that was primarily methane and it was and non, or at least there wasn't oxygen, and the first life forms were not chlorophyll and not oxygen using life forms, and when those life forms came along, they displaced earlier life forms that could no longer exist in a high oxygen environment.
Yeah, basically, yeah. What I wanted to point out, though, is that in the rocks on Earth, there is sufficient carbon dioxide locked up due to organic processes that should we decompose all of that, we'd have about the same amount of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere that Venus does right now.
Mm, and that would be a disaster.
Yeah.
You'd have an 800-degree Fahrenheit planet.
Well, closer to 900, but yeah.
Yeah, although Venus is a little closer to the sun, but yeah, point taken. Joe, thank you very much. I got to move along, but excellent point. Thank you. Christopher in New York. Hey, Christopher, what's up?
Hi, yes. I'm just wondering, because we're already almost into March here of this election year, and I actually just finished rereading Armed Madhouse, and
yeah.
It seems to me we're in an election season, and nobody is talking on either side about voter suppression and what we're going to be doing about it this year. Are we going to be able to make sure that we don't have another stolen election in 2008? Because it's going to be another close one.
I agree with your concern, and I know that there are a lot of small independent groups around that are looking at this kind of thing. I hope the Democratic Party takes it seriously this year. They haven't in the past. In fact, they've been even afraid to discuss it. And all we can do is just keep speaking out on it. I talk about it regularly. I hope you are to all your friends and talk to your elected members of Congress and say, hey, you know, we don't want private corporations involved in our voting. We don't want private corporations or, for that matter, corrupt officials in Secretary of State's offices controlling our voting rolls. Secretary of State's offices, if they are running elections, should be nonpartisan offices rather than partisan offices. There should be a law that says that what Ken Blackwell did in Ohio, being the chairman of the Bush for President Committee and being responsible for deciding who gets to vote in Ohio, is a crime. I mean, just very straightforward things, not to mention caging. The Republican Party has been operating under a restraining order for almost 30 years, preventing them from caging, and yet they are still doing it. Testimony before Congress, Karl Rove's office, who's responsible for caging, never followed up on. I mean, there are so many areas here that really, really needs to be, that really need to be looked into. Yeah, well said. Susan in Washington State. Hey, Susan.
Yes.
Hi.
I just wanted to make, pardon?
You're on the air.
Okay, I just wanted to make a comment about the most successful life forms on the planet have been insects.
You're right.
And insects only have queens. They don't have kings.
Now, how do you know that?
Well, because
you've never seen an insect with a crown. No, you're right. That's the upside. The downside is that the queens in the insect community have no leadership skills or role or anything like that. They basically are just egg, machines.
Well, yeah, that's true too. But so, just the same, what I mean.
No, but I get your point. It's a good one. It's a funny one. Thank you very much, Susan.
You're very welcome, honey. Have a nice day.
Thank you. You too, Debbie in Scottsdale. Hey, Debbie, what's on your mind today?
Yeah. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great.
I'm a little bit disillusioned by the mainstream media that every time I listen to any station, it's negative Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Anything they read on a telephone call-in program, because I don't know if I'm allowed to mention who they are.
I'd rather you didn't. Yeah.
And everybody calls in, and they read from the newspaper, and they are all negative Clinton. It's so unbelievably on one side.
Yeah.
And Mr. Obama, his economics guy, he's a skull and bones guy. They don't tell you that.
Yeah, well, so is John Kerry. I'm not sure that disqualifies somebody, but I think that there was a germ of truth to that Saturday Night Live skit, and there is no doubt in my mind that in the United States right now, particularly in the media, that women don't get equal treatment with men. They get, as I said, a strong woman is viewed as a negative, a strong man is viewed as a positive. And we're talking about President of the United States. It's a job that, by description requires some strength. And I just think that's a real shame. Debbie, thanks for the call and for your comment. Arnie in Linwood, Washington. Hey, Arnie, about a minute before the break here. What's up?
Well, I think that feminism weakened itself by not going for true equality. And I'll give you two examples because I know time is limited. I don't recall them demanding that women also register themselves for the Selective Service.
This is where I think that we should have a national service program, and it should include men and women.
And I think that this business about them on domestic violence, always treating women as the victim, is weakening on their part, because there's plenty of studies that show that women commit upward of 50% of domestic violence.
No, Arnie, I'm sorry. There are no studies that show that. There are no studies that show that. And look at your prison populations. Domestic violence is occasionally committed by women, but the vast majority of domestic violence in the United States is committed by men against women. And it's just, hey, testosterone is the most dangerous drug on earth. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
And welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. We've been doing an hour here on feminism, and speaking of women who take no guff, Helen Radner on the line with us, the president of Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. And Ellen, you're in Ohio today.
I am in Ohio today for the big debate. I was in Columbus, moving towards Cleveland right now. And I got to tell you, I do think this state is going to go for Hillary. First of all, they are well positioned in all the congressional districts. They have Stephanie Tubbs Jones, who actually probably her district will go for Obama, but that's because the demographics of the district, Warrenville Heights, Ohio, Shaker, et cetera. And, but also because the governor, the lieutenant governor who I went to school with, and Stephanie Tubbs and a lot of other members in Ohio have declared for Obama. For Hillary, not Obama.
For Hillary, yeah.
So it's going to be pretty interesting to see what happens on that front. Of course,
although in Washington State you had the two state senators, Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell going for Hillary, and the governor, Christine Gregoire, going for Obama, and the state went for Obama.
Right.
I'm not
Ohio
sure that endorsements always make it. Okay. How so?
Just because it's a very conservative state in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
And they watched the Clintons here. The Clintons did very, very well here. Bill Clinton is very well loved here. I don't know. I'm from Ohio. I just have that sense in my bone that it's going to go for Hillary. The mayor of Cincinnati just declared for Obama, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. It may be very much sort of divided as to how things happen here.
Mm-hmm.
On some other fronts, Chairman Conyers today went after the Justice Department's poor enforcement in combating voter suppression. The Deputy Attorney General, whose name I have a little trouble pronouncing, Agawai, I believe it is, he said he would need to. He said several times when questioned by members of the committee that he would need to speak to the Justice Department before he would give answers to certain questions. The Conyers committee went after him and said, well, they pursue voter fraud, but they disregard examples of voter suppression. They supported the Indiana law that looked into requiring identification. And they demanded that they report in 2 weeks about the 10 states that they have sent a letter to. This is the Justice Department, urging them to purge their voter roll.
Hmm. Interesting. In other words, we have Mukasey following in the footsteps of Gonzalez in encouraging states to do what Jeb Bush basically did in Florida before 2000.
Exactly.
Jeez.
Some economic news today. Mm-hmm. The conference board said the Consumer Confidence Index went to a new low. It's the lowest in 15 years from dropped 123 points to 750. The Department of Labor also talked about the increase in the producer's price index. It went up 0.04% in January, and that producer price index excludes food and fuel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as if nobody uses food or fuel.
Right.
It is, you know, the majority or a large chunk of the income of average working people, but it's not a large chunk of the income of millionaires and billionaires. So why should the millionaires and billionaires who run this country say, you know, that should be included? By the way, Ellen, when you and I go to Darfur in a couple of weeks, I understand that the area that we're flying in the belly of this cargo plane, tied to the ribs of the plane, and that when we get there, we're going to be in an area where there are no roads and there are a lot of landmines. Is that true?
Yes, it is, but that's why they suggested to us that we actually stay and not wander off, because the area that we will be actually staying in and working out of delivering these sacks of hope is cleared of landmines.
Okay, great. Yeah. And people can go to TomHartmann.com, and there's a link right there where you can donate $50 for one of these Sacks of Hope. How would you describe it?
The Sacks of Hope have mosquito nets, they have tarp, they have a jug for people to carry water. It allows a family of five to survive as a refugee for at least 5 weeks, if not a whole lot longer. And I just want to say $50 is great if you can do it. It buys a complete sack of hope. But even if you can only do $5, that would be great, too.
Right. And you'll find a link to that over at TomHartmann.com and presumably shortly at TalkRadioNews.com as well.
That's right. We're trying to raise money.
Yep, that's right. Ohio, the debate tonight, we've kind of talked about that. We've talked about what's going on. What else is going on in Washington, D.C. right now?
Okay, well, the other thing that's going on is the Armed Services Committee met today, and the Army Chief of Staff talked about that. He said that the length of combat tours must be reduced from at least 15 to 12 months. He said, well, if President Bush reduces the brigades to 15 units, then that's doable. He said that this is really pushing the service. All these years of war has really been a strain. He also talked about the Senate Democrats also talked about the Foreclosure Prevention Act. Dick Durbin and Schumer said that this needs to be a second stimulus package and that it's very, very important. Also today on the Senate Environmental Committee, Barbara Boxer talked about their internal document saying that Stephen Johnson, who was the administrator, I believe he still is, administrator of the EPA, said that if he rejected the waiver of the Clean Air Act in California, that he might have to resign. And a staff person encouraged him to accept this waiver or to do something about it. Also, the White House said that they are not impressed with North Korea, and Secretary Rice was in China. She says she expects China and other countries to use their influence on North Korea in regards to their nukes.
Interesting. Finally, Ellen, just very quickly, do you think this Don Siegelman story is going to have legs?
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to continue flogging it here, and because there is so much more to the story that has not been told. People need to let CBS News, CBSNews.com, know that they want to hear more about it. Ellen Ratner, TalkRadioNews.com. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
Tom Hartmann. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartmann Program. Tom Hartmann Program. Tom Hartmann. Talk radio for the rest of us.
So there's some, you know, speaking of the topic of our last hour, feminism, stepping off from that, there are some very strange memes, thought viruses running around the right-wing culture, and not just in the United States, but all around the world, that seem to have At some level, there's a relationship with the power relationships between men and women. That being that in those societies where women have equal power with men, you tend to get zero population growth, which is, in my opinion, a healthy thing. It's why I submit that the women's rights movement is probably the most important of all the human rights movements in the world. And yet, at the same time, there is this racial undertone, this racist, frankly, undertone on the right to this notion, to the notion that maybe zero population growth is a bad thing if it's happening to our race, that being the race of the people on the right speaking, like blonde-haired, blue-eyed John Gibson of Fox News, who recently said,
"Now it's time for my word. Do your duty. Make more babies." That's the lesson drawn out of two interesting stories over the last couple of days. First, a story yesterday that half of the kids in this country under 5 years old are minorities. By far, the greatest number are Hispanic. Know what that means? 25 years and the majority population is Hispanic. Why is that? Well, Hispanics are having more kids and others, notably the ones Hispanics called gabachos, white people, are having fewer. Put it bluntly, we need more babies. Forget about that zero population growth stuff that my poor generation was misled on. Why is this important? Because civilizations need population to survive. So far, we're doing our part here in America, but Hispanics can't carry the whole load. The rest of you get busy. Make babies. Or put another way, a slogan for our times, procreation, not recreation. That's my word.
Catherine Joyce is with us. She wrote a great piece for The Nation. And Catherine is a columnist for The Nation and the author of the forthcoming book, Quiverful, Inside the Christian Patriarchy Movement. TheNation.com for her article is titled Missing the Right Babies. And Catherine, your thoughts on John Gibson's commentary?
That about sums it up. The we need more babies is kind of the really de-academic language version of what this argument is.
Yeah. Now, the population of the world at the time that 2,000 years ago when Jesus was walking around was around a half a billion people. We hit 1 billion people in 1800. So arguably the entire history of the 165,000 years that humans have been around the planet to make 1 billion people in 1800. Now, I don't recall that civilization was at risk in 1800. In fact, we had spread out all over the planet and were you know, seriously starting to degrade the environment by 1800. We were only 1 billion people. The second billion took only 130 years, 1930. The third billion took only 30 years, 1960. The fourth billion took only 14 years, 1974. The fifth billion took only 13 years, 1987. The sixth billion took only 11 years, 1999. We're now a half billion beyond that, and it's just been 7-8 years. It in some areas is slowing down a little bit, in part because of disease and whatnot. But how can any rational person say that the year that John Kennedy was inaugurated, 1960, when there were 3 billion people on the earth, fewer than half that there are today, that it would be a disaster if we had zero population growth for a generation or two and we got back to that population, for example, that seemed to have far less dramatic and negative impact, at least environmentally?
Well, I think the answer to that is just reading the subtext in what John Gibson was saying. He started that off with this really kind of alarmist cry. If your ears are pitched to hear that in 25 years, whites are no longer going to be the majority of this country. And that's not just, as he kind of tried to sum it up, the Hispanics can't carry all the burden. What that really is a call to kind of race panic. They're going to outbreed you. And that's a very old call. But it's really been giving new life, particularly in the past couple of years, with the pro-family wing of the Christian right, which has been floating this argument called demographic winter, and that is that the white Christian West is failing to have enough babies, and they are going to be overrun by minorities and immigrants who have come into their country.
There's some truth to that, isn't there?
I don't know that there is truth to that. I think particularly right now they're aiming at Europe, where they're really raising the alarm about Muslim population.
Mm-hmm. Particularly in Holland, and now you've got Vlad Putin actually making a bounty for babies. But when I say there's truth to that, actually let me qualify that. It seems that there is, in many of these countries, significant truth to the fact that the middle-class populations are at zero population growth, mostly white populations, not entirely, and that the immigrant populations, which tend more often to be people of darker skin, are increasing in numbers simply because they're immigrant populations. I mean, this is sort of like in the 1880s in the United States when the WASPs were looking at the Irish or actually in the 1840s and 1850s and 60s, they were looking at the Irish going, oh, my God, the Irish are coming. It's a terrible thing. And then in the 1890s, yeah. The Irish were saying, oh, my God, look at all these Italian immigrants. They're going to pollute the gene pool here in America. And, I mean, we've heard this argument a number of times, and it ultimately, if not it being a racist argument, at the very least is a culturalist argument. And so my point is that there is some truth to the fact that demographics are changing and changing significantly and rapidly. However, I'm not sure that that means that culture is going to change in significant ways other than perhaps becoming more tolerant. In fact, it may be a good thing for culture.
I agree with you. And I think you're right that that's a very old argument. And the notion of who is one of us is constantly shifting. A while ago, it would not have been the Irish who are now considered, you know, more or less a majority population.
Well, there was a debate in the Constitutional Convention about whether Catholics should be allowed to participate. I mean, you know, the big, you know, being called a papist was similar to being called a traitor in the late 1700s in the United States.
Absolutely, and now they're making similar arguments, particularly against Muslim immigrants in Europe. And I think a lot of, you kind of hinted at this, a lot of the changing demographics are not yet reflected in the immigrant populations. And a lot of times, I think what a lot of social scientists have noticed is after a few generations, immigrant populations tend to be assimilated and tend to start reflecting the birth rates of their adopted countries. But in any case, the only reason to really call this a demographic winter or a crisis or, you know, some form of new Holocaust in Europe is if you're really overly concerned about what race and what religion the babies are that are being born.
Right. And the argument is made, and I've had conservatives make it on this program, and it makes no sense to me at all. The argument is made that that a good piece of this demographic winter is that because of zero population growth, there's going to be a disproportionate number of old people, and therefore the younger people will not be able to do all the work or care for them. And my read of history, particularly dramatic population changes, like after the Black Death in Europe in the 1400s, is that when population drops, the Spanish flu, which almost exclusively hit people between the ages of 15 and 40, older people and younger people by and large didn't die from the flu, that when the population drops, all that happens is that the price of labor goes up and a middle class emerges.
Absolutely, and there will be, you know, probably a new middle class of Latinos in this country, of course, that's already very much happening, and Muslims across Europe, as well as other immigrants. And that should be something to be welcomed because they are there. They have been there for hundreds of years, in fact, and it's just kind of alarmism to say, oh no, this is a really terrible thing for you.
Well, it's racism.
Yes.
I mean, let's call it what it is. It's racism. But there is a very serious, very aggressive movement out there to push this whole demographic winter notion. It's coming from largely the Christian right in the United States and in Europe. Is there any significant or organized pushback? Because these guys are organized.
They are very organized. I think it's the U.S. Christian right leadership particularly, and in particular among them, kind of a real academic vanguard that uses a lot of social science arguments when they're really pushing the same morality. So they're really strongly kind of tapping into these nationalistic and racist fears in order to promote the same agenda that we're all very familiar with here in Europe. So they're telling Europe the reason why you are having all of these demographic anxieties and worries about the future is because for so long you have been living in a secular, liberal, modernistic mindset, and you've been allowing gay rights and women's rights and reproductive rights, and you need to really turn that around and turn it back to this patriarchal notion of the natural family.
Let's just go back to the 10th century.
Yes.
I mean, that's about it. And the most recent incarnation, or not the most recent incarnation, but probably the most obvious, Reagan's whole thing about the welfare queen. I mean, that was the whole subtext, again, was, you know, racial minorities having a lot of babies and et cetera. It's amazing. Catherine Joyce wrote the article. It's called Missing, the Right Babies for the Nation, thenation.com. And check out her book when it comes out, Queerful, Inside the Christian Patriarchy Movement. Catherine, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. The Tom Hartman Program.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Listener-supported radio, supported by you, our listeners, supporting our sponsors, the advertisers you hear on our local radio station, supporting the local radio station, telling people about your local radio station, putting the bumper sticker for your local radio station on your car and driving around with it, and noting that our program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans, because keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Frank in Los Angeles. Hey, Frank, you want to weigh in on Ralph Nader? What's up?
Yeah, well, the thing about Ralph Nader, you know, he talks a good talk, you know, workers' rights, consumer rights, civil rights, but he's a spoiler, and I don't understand, and I can't figure this guy out. Why doesn't he get behind his voters and go behind the candidates that's most likely to win and go behind the Democrats and get them elected so they can make all these changes? You can't make changes if you're looking in and you're on the outside. You got to get in there to do it. And third parties never win. One candidate might win here and there, but that's the way the setup is. And I think he enjoys it, because in Florida, the Republicans gave him $10 million, and they paid for all his billboards in the last election. So what is he trying for, the fourth time to win the presidency? You know, he's just siphoning off votes, and he's not accomplishing anything. And I don't believe he believes in what he talks about. Maybe he's interested in living off the money on his foundation that he set up.
You know, yeah, I'm not quite that cynical about Ralph Nader, Frank. I'm sorry. I get your point, but there are always going to be a small number of voters who are absolute purists and will only vote the candidate, even when there's no possibility that that candidate will win, who is absolutely right down the line the purest for them. There are the libertarians on the right. There are the Naderites, if you will, on the left, or actually the Socialist Party and the Communist Workers Party are very often on ballots, you know.
Yeah.
And so you've got all these smaller parties that are out there. And frankly, I don't think that they're going to have any impact whatsoever on this election. And Ralph Nader does raise issues that need to be raised. And the only way that he can get a national platform to talk about them and be paid attention to by the press is to run for president. And so I think it's a fine thing that he's doing it. I'm not all that concerned about it. I am, you know, in retrospect, his strategy in 2000 was terrible. And in 2004, David Cobb, the Green Party candidate, did it right. He said, if you're in a solidly blue state, vote for me and help the Green Party get federal matching funds for future elections, particularly for the state and local elections, because the Green Party has brought instant runoff voting to over 300 communities across the United States. It's a good thing that we have the Green Party. On the other hand, he said, if you're in a state that's a purple state that is undecided, then vote for John Kerry. And I congratulate David Cobb for that. And I just don't share your concern about Frank, about Ralph Nader. I don't think he's the boogeyman. I think he's a good and decent guy who's got some important things to say. And he has been so marginalized over the years. Very, very few people are going to vote for him. And, you know, Bednarik or whoever is going to be the Libertarian candidate this year is probably going to pull more votes from the Republicans than Nader will pull from the Democrats. I just don't think it's an issue. Scott in Los Angeles. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Here's a question. I don't know if this is crazy, but sort of humor me on this and see what you think. How can Hillary complain about gender bias in the media when her sex and her name are really the number one and number two reasons anyone is voting for her?
Well, first of all, I haven't heard Hillary complain about gender bias in the media, and I'm the one complaining about gender bias in the media. And secondly, I don't think that it is her gender why people are voting for her. I think it's that she's been a co-participant with Bill Clinton, who's arguably the most powerful and popular Democratic politician, certainly of the last generation.
I think it's both her sex and her name. I mean, I think a lot of people, my mother included, my sweet mother included, are voting for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. There are some African Americans who are voting for Barack Obama because he's an African American, and if there was a white guy in the race, there would be some white people who would be voting
right.
for him because he's the white guy.
I don't think, however, that those
are decisive voters. I think like the Nader voters. I think that those are part of a fringe element within the party.
I don't know. I think that there's a lot of people who are voting for Hillary Clinton either because of Bill's successes or because Hillary is a woman. And here's the thing I want to say about that is that I don't think she ever used it to her advantage. And I do think that I've read some complaints by her about gender bias, at least maybe from her supporters about gender bias.
Yeah, well, certainly her supporters bring it up, but I've never heard
her use it, turn it around, and use it to her advantage.
Well, then she would get shot down. You know, as soon as she, if she was to reach out and say, hey, I'm a woman, vote for me because I'm a woman, you're a woman, that kind of thing, she would get ripped apart for that. And similarly, and to her credit, I have not heard her play the I'm a victim routine, even though I'll tell you, The way that she's treated in the media is very different than any man would be.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at
34 minutes after the hour. Notes over at the Daily Kos. This is a good one. McJoan writing over at the Daily Kos about the whole FISA bill. The Protect AT&T Act. They call it Protect America Act, but it's actually Protect AT&T and the Bush Cronies and Criminals Act. And, you know, trying to whip up fear among the American people. And the Senate just rolled right over. But the House of Representatives has not. And good on them for it. And, in fact, the Republicans are already talking about running on this thing in November. In any case, now is the time to contact your member of the House of Representatives. If you go to callcongress.org, there's a list of toll-free numbers that you can use to call Capitol Hill. If you're not sure who represents you in the House of Representatives, just give me your zip code. And they'll connect you to the appropriate person. They'll tell you who your representative is and connect you to him or her. And then, very courteously and politely, this is my recommendation. I mean, you make up your own mind what you want to say and do. But the way that I do it is I courteously and politely say, hi, you know, my name's Tom Hartman. I live at this address. I'm a constituent of so-and-so, in my case, Darlene Hooley's. And I would just like it known that as a voter, as a constituent, as a registered Democrat, that I would like to, I would like the Congresswoman to know that I think that she should vote, or she should, you know, join with the leadership and vote against giving immunity to the Bush administration and the telecommunications companies that broke the law. And now is the time to let the House of Representatives, and nothing wrong with letting the Senate know that too, although they've already blown it, they've already had the vote, but it's going to go to conference and then it's going to come back out of conference again. And hopefully Nancy Pelosi and the folks in the House will hold the line. Hopefully. Nick in Orlando, Florida. Hey, Nick, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Tom. First off, I'd like to apologize because I'm forced to podcast your show, so I really don't know what's going on today. But I do have a quick question for you with the debates coming up tonight. I've never heard the question asked on how Hillary would handle politics in the Middle East, being a female and the way that females are perceived in the Middle East. I was just kind of looking
for... Well, you know, Benazir Bhutto ran Pakistan. I mean, it's not like, you know, Golda Meir ran Israel. It's not like women have not had power in the Middle East. So I just think it's a non-issue, Nick. Bottom line. Chuck in Long Beach, California. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm concerned about Barack Obama's security. The Secret Service has been assigned to protect him, yet the Secret Service is part of the executive branch of government, which in the last 7 years has proven itself to be capable of quite incompetent catastrophes. Last Friday, I called...
To be charitable.
Last Friday, I called the White House to complain about their actions at the Dallas rally, and I was told, quote, if you want to get anywhere, call the DNC, end quote. The Democratic National Committee. Just how the hell do they fit in?
Yeah, I didn't know that the DNC provided security to the presidential candidates. I thought that was the Secret Service's job. A lot of us share your concern, Chuck, and oddly, this was even a top story on Drudge for a day or two, you know, the right-wing website, that the Secret Service had essentially told the Dallas Police Department to stand down, and it was particularly odd and pointed, or whatever the word is, it being in Dallas. In any case, I all we can do, I think, is I think it's been highlighted, and I suspect that you know, that it's not going to happen again. But you know, all we can do, I think, is just, you know, hold Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and just, you know, all the folks who are running in this race, you know, in good thoughts or prayer or whatever's appropriate for you and your traditions. And you know, if you have an opportunity to talk to your elected officials, say, you know, Secret Service protection for our candidates is a good thing. We don't want to lose another good person. Chuck, thanks a lot for the call. It's a tough one. Ken in San Francisco. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Tom. Good morning. I just want to say that I try and listen to a cross-section of the media, although I draw the line at Fox. And I agree with you. I think that Hillary gets a lot of bad press, and for no obvious reason. Although I should be up front and say I'm an Obama supporter, and he's my candidate. However, every now and then, I guess it's happened two or three times, my partner and I get to the point where we get so sick of the Hillary bashing on television and in the media that we go on her website and send her more money, or we write a check and send it off to her, because that's the only thing we as individuals can do to try and counter.
You know, I don't object to the media saying, here's where the polls are, or here's what's happening in the campaigns, or here are the issues. But when they start using adjectives like shrill, that are historically only applied to women and only in a pejorative context, I'm offended. And, you know, I mean, that's where I'm upset about that. There are a set of adjectives and arguably some verbs that used to be back in my grandparents' generation applied to African Americans that thankfully are not being applied now, at least in polite company and in the media, to Barack Obama. But that same category of adjectives are only with regard to women seem to be acceptable, and I'm not a Hillary supporter, nor am I a Barack Obama supporter. I'm agnostic on this. I think they both make a great president, and I will vote for either one of them in a heartbeat. And let's let the will of the people decide this. And it seems to me that Ken, you're right, and I'm not sure I call it Hillary bashing. I think, frankly, it's more woman bashing, because I suspect that you would see the same thing about any woman. And I remember when Geraldine Ferraro was running as vice president, we were visiting the same issue, and we were having these same conversations. So, Ken, thanks a lot for the call. I think you touched it well. Mark in California. Hey, Mark.
Yeah, I have a question about, like, I listen to these programs all the time, and I love listening to you, Tom, but these things get brought up that never get answered. I mean, it's like, all of a sudden, McCain, it's gone. All of a sudden, the Downing Street reports, they're gone. All of a sudden, you know, Katrina News, it's gone. I mean, it's like, what kind of way is there that these stories can get so, buried that we only hear them from...
Well, it's not that they're buried. It's that news reporters look for news hooks, and a news hook, by definition, is an event. So if we want these issues to come back to the fore, and they should, then what we need to have is congressional investigations.
Yeah, but if you listen to your friend that's on your show, he always answers like, yes, we're looking into it. I understand they've got
Bernie.
A lot of things to do, but they need to drop everything. I mean, reality is that... we're going to just go through the same cycle and have a new president, whether it be a McCain or a Hillary or an Obama, that's going to have to deal with all the same problems, and they're not going to do anything about it.
Yeah. I
don't even want to vote.
Mark, I am not that pessimistic. I'm sorry, and I encourage you to vote.
I don't mean I'm not going to vote. I don't care whether it's Hillary, McCain, or Obama. I want to see some type of...
You will when McCain starts appointing more right-wing cranks to the Supreme Court. you'll care tremendously.
Yeah, well, I don't know, Tom. I mean, I just I listen.
You'll care when they kick in your door and say we're hauling you off to a prison, and you say what for, and they say we don't have to tell you because Judge Scalia and his buddies on the Supreme Court ruled that we don't have
happened.
To tell you.
It's
I know,
happened,
and it's going to get worse. It's time for us to take back the Supreme Court. There's going to be one and at least two vacancies on the Supreme Court sometime in the next 6 or 8 years or 10 years at the 8 or 9 years at the most. I mean, you've got, you know, John Paul Stevens is in his 80s. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has had cancer and is in her 70s. I mean, we cannot afford to have a Republican in the White House when these next Supreme Court vacancies come in. My sense is that these people, Kennedy for that matter, Justice Kennedy is in his 70s. People are hanging on by their fingernails. And vote Democratic. Mike in Madison. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Tom, real quick here. I got to get your advice on something here. I'm looking at this Resco thing here in Illinois with Obama.
Right.
And you were talking about those judges in that Spiegelman case and what did the federal judges do to keep their jobs. Now, let me just run several things by you and tell me what you think. Again, number one, the prosecutor in this case is Patrick Fitzgerald.
Yep.
And the judge is this Amy St. Eve lady who's a Bush appointee. Yep. This case was supposed to go to trial yesterday, but they moved it to March 4th. Okay. Now, Obama has given conflicting statements to the Sun-Times here, the Chicago Tribune, and I've even seen him on Stephanopoulos, and not to mention that he said in the debate, he made it seem as though he didn't know Resco, that he only did like 15 minutes of work for him. Well, come to find out, he's known this guy for over 17 years. Now, the judge in this trial, this Amy St. Eve, she denied bail to Resco because Resco wasn't upfront with her about his finances. Come to find out, he had gotten $3 million from a billionaire, an Iraqi billionaire in France, wired him $3 million.
Mike, what's your point?
My point is this. Do you think that this judge would bring Obama to trial to clear up his statements?
You mean with subpoena Barack Obama?
Exactly.
No, no. His okay. political statements or his political affiliations with this guy are not at the heart of or even peripheral to the charges against Resco, if my understanding and read of it, and which is basically pretty much limited to the New York Times stories and Chicago Tonight
right.
stories. But no, I don't think
so. You don't think that? Okay.
Where I'd start worrying about being politicized is if the trial gets moved back to October.
Yeah.
If the trial gets moved back to October, then you know that the Bush administration got into this thing and they're thinking that they can somehow, you know, link this to Obama in a way that's going to stick to him and make it look bad.
Okay,
that's what I would be worried about. But moving it back a week or two, I don't think it makes any difference. Thanks, Mike. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
The Tom Hartman Radio Program, where despair is not an option. 866-303-2270, our phone number, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room. Just a reminder, the next 3 days, you will hear Laura Flanders in this spot, one of my favorite people and a great talk show host, while we're going to head down to Mexico and pick up the Air America cruise. We'll be back on the air here live on Monday. Although the shows will be live for the next 3 days, and don't miss them. Laura's got some great shows planned. David in St. Paul, Minnesota on 9:50 a.m. Hey, David, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hey, Tom. Speaking of the gender with Hillary, I have 5 staunch Republican sisters who I've gotten numerous anti-Hillary emails from them. And they are, like I said, they're Republicans, but there is no way. It's almost like they're taking this anti-feminism stance, and there's no way that they would vote for her, even if they'd. You know, it's just. It's,
now, is this because of her gender, or is it because of policy issues?
I think it's a little bit. Well, I think it's for policies, but also I think there's part of that anti-Hillary thing. Just that I think it's more like an anti-feminism thing. They don't want to be viewed as a feminist, you know. So it's kind of amazing.
I would suspect that it probably. I mean, I can't speak for your sisters, obviously.
Yeah,
I think so much of the so-called anti-Hillary sentiment that's out there is simply the result of 20 years of Fox News and Republican Party. you know, just continually, you know, dropping the sledgehammer on her at every opportunity. And everybody says, oh, well, you know, they're not anti-Barack. Well, that's because the Republican Party hasn't started in on him yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Give them a few months. It'll happen. It'll happen.
Yeah, and one other thing, Tom. The Minnesota state legislator just overrode a veto by Tim Pawlenty up here for a gas tax. So, and I want to thank you because I called the six Republicans that voted in favor of this. They're basically putting their political careers on the line here for voting for this tax increase. So, and I wouldn't have done that without you know, your motivation and everything. So, well, I want to thank you for that. So,
you're welcome. And
all right,
good on you, David, for being an activist. I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thanks
all
a
right.
lot for the call. Great to hear from you, Weldon in Minneapolis. Hey, Weldon.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to bring something to your attention that just came up on thinkprogress.com and that or .org. And that is some blogger yesterday was in line. I guess Karl Rove was doing a speech and doing some handshaking beforehand. And some blogger got him to hold up a banner, and it said, "Free Don Siegelman" on it.
You're kidding.
And it is the most hysterical thing you'll ever see because Karl Rove looks like he has his pants on fire.
Oh, that's amazing. You said a Think Progress. I'm looking at Think Progress right now. I don't see it. I read it every day.
Thinkprogress.org? Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Huh. Amazing. Well, I'll have to check it out. Maybe I just need to refresh the screen. Weldon, thanks for the heads up. That's a great one.
Have a good vacation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Sorry to cut your last word off there. I will do my very best. 866-303-2271. Juanita in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Juanita.
Hi. This is in response to your last guest.
I was talking about the demographic winter and all the hysteria.
Yeah, I guess I resent the fact that you're immediately labeled a racist if you have any, I don't know, qualms or fears. I'm a black American, and I don't necessarily relish the idea of a Hispanic majority in the United States. And also, John Gibson, he perpetuates, I think, a little bit of a myth that it's about people just having more babies. I think our population growth is fueled more by our generous immigration policy, basically an unregulated illegal immigration policy. And once people get here, I mean, they've made the effort to get here, they're not going to leave, and they establish themselves. So
I believe Juanita, that the two drivers of population, or the three drivers of population growth in the United States right now, given that most of the middle class in America, whether it's the African-American middle class, whether it's the white middle class, Hispanic middle class, Asian middle class, most of the middle class in America is at zero population growth. So the three primary drivers are, number one, poverty, because poor people tend to have more babies. Number two, and you know, we can get in, there's a whole variety of reasons associated with that, but number two, immigration. You're absolutely right. And number three, the Catholicism of many of the recent immigrants that causes them to think that they'll go to hell if they use birth control, and so they have larger families. And you see, we saw the same thing with Catholics from Ireland when they came to the United States in the late 1800s. The first, second generations had huge families. Some, you know, I remember when I was a kid growing up, you could tell who were the Catholics because they had eight or nine kids. I mean, right up through the 50s and 60s. That
well, as those immigrants become more middle class, they have fewer children.
That's
so
right.
Actually,
that's right.
Really fueled in large part by our immigration policy.
Yeah, I think I would say that is a major factor. I do not disagree with you, and it concerns me when a white guy comes out and says this is a problem, and therefore the white people need to have more babies. It's not about white or black or
well, I wish black people would have more babies. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, really, what it's about. Well, I think we all have enough babies, but what's really going on here is a racially driven agenda. They're fixing to use race again in this next election. And it's not a healthy thing. Juanita, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Roland in Silver Spring, Maryland. Hey, Roland.
Yeah, hey. I love your show.
Thank you.
It's really an honor to interact with you. I was really disappointed when Senator Mikulski voted to give telecom companies retroactive immunity.
Yeah, me too.
Cardin voted right. But anyway, I'm going to implement your suggestion, your strategy. I'm going to join the local Democratic club. And,
great.
I really want to get active. I'm either start or join in on whatever effort might already be on
That's great. Roland, we're out of time, but I tip my hat to you. I salute you. Good on you. And thank you for the call and for your kind words. Laura Flanner's filling in for me Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this weekend. I'll be back Monday challenging liberal Chris Hedges, who's going to be here saying he doesn't believe in atheists. Eh? And After War, The Political Economy of Exporting Democracy, Christopher Coyne, an economist. So it should be an interesting conversation, plus the best of the rest of the news and your calls. Don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great week.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.